Good morning.
Good morning.
one theme for today's talk. I actually have a title. This is very rare that I have a title. But I thought of a title beforehand, so I thought I should tell you the title since I have one. Usually, sometimes people go to places and they record my talk, and later the person responsible for recording it approaches me and they ask me, "What's the title of your talk?" And then I have to think, "Oh, let's see, what did I talk about?" And I make up a title on the spot. But in this case, I have one planned out ahead of time. So the title's called Departure. Departure. So what do I mean by departure? What I mean is that, generally speaking, there's a way in which we are moving through our life. We could call it, let's just call it temporarily, let's call it an operating system. Kind of our operating system. And we might think that there's a person behind this operating system that's controlling the system and operating. But I don't think that's not my understanding of this operating system. My understanding is that the operating system is going along in its normal way by which it's been conditioned to operate. And actually, anything that thinks that it's my operating system or I'm the one operating it, that's just contained within the operating system. That's part of the operating system. The thing that thinks I'm that there's an I there that's operating really isn't the case. The case is the I part is coming out of the operating system. Particularly the I part emerges when the operating system feels like there's some feeling that it's falling to pieces. It's not working under the conditions called the present moment that's arising right now. And the operating system seems like it's starting to waver. And then right about that time, the I pops up and says, the I that's the part of this operating system pops up and says, what's wrong with my operating system? Something's wrong with it. It needs to be adjusted in some way. But really, the operating system is beneath any kind of consciousness that we have about it. So actually, things that come up and challenge it, they're challenging it in a way that's beneath our conscious mind. And really, that's what this practice that we do is about. That's what our meditation practice is about. It's becoming intimate with our operating system. Because actually, when we sit down and do Zazen, it's not a conscious activity. We might think we are the ones sitting down to do Zazen, and I'm going to practice Zazen and do the best I can through this period of Zazen. But really, all that I thinking part is not doing Zazen. The part, what we're really doing Zazen is we're letting go of eye-making activity. So as we let go of the eye-making activity and things become a little quiet in that area, we can sense the operating system, how it's arising continuously. We see something more deep about ourselves that's within our individual life coming up. So that's a little introduction. Now, speaking of departure, another way in which I'm going to depart today from my normal operating system is that under most conditions, especially in recent years, when I've been asked to speak about my experience of Zen Buddhism, I usually always speak about some classic old Zen text or Buddhist text, almost always. And the person would have to be dead for like 1,000 years. Because then we have some trust, you know, in what they said. That what they said was, it's lasted 1,000 years, so it's like, oh, we can maybe trust what they're saying. Because sometimes, in recent times, we have to look very closely now. Are we going to be looking at what this person said 1,000 years from now? Is it going to endure? So, departing from that way, though, today I'm going to use as the kind of a center piece of this talk is a poem that I read when I was 19 years old. It's by Theodore Rethke. It's called The Waking. So I'll read it to you. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I feel my fade in what I cannot fear. I learn by going where I have to go. We think by feeling. What is there to know? I hear my being dance from ear to ear. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. Of those so close beside me, which are you? God bless the ground. I shall walk softly there and learn by going where I have to go. Light takes the tree, but who can tell us how? The lowly worm climbs up a winding stair. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. Great nature has another thing to do to you and me. So take the lively air and lovely learn by going where to go. This shaking keeps me steady, I should know. What falls away is always and is near. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I learn by going where I have to go. So when I read that, when I was 19, I thought, that's kind of a nice poem. And then maybe I wrote a short little paper on it or something, but I don't remember what I said because I was taking, you know, American poetry class. But about a few weeks ago, I realized something, and I had never realized this before. I have realized that that line from the poem that says, I learn by going where I have to go. I realized I have been using that my entire life as a mantra. And I didn't realize it until a few weeks ago, because I'm always saying it. So I did not know the effect that that poem had on me when I read it when I was 19 until a few weeks ago. Because I continuously saying it, but in my consciousness I didn't know I was saying it, because I'm always saying it. And I always say it when something comes up that's kind of challenging for me. So all I can say is, this is what's happening right now. I don't know where it came from or why. It seems like it shouldn't be happening, but it is. I can add that in there. But still, by some condition or another, this is where I am, and this is what's happening. And all I can say is, this is where I have to go. I don't know why, and sometimes I don't know how. But I know I just have to take the next step. So I'll go through the poem a little bit. And with that in mind, I want to also add another... of course, there's lots of Buddhist things, too, you know, that I kind of hold in my head as mantras, too. And another one is by Dogen, founder of our particular school of Buddhism, who says a line that's been very important to me, too, is sometimes we turn the wheel of the Dharma, and sometimes we are turned by the wheel of the Dharma. So, most of the time, it feels like we are the ones who are turning the wheel of the Dharma, because we're grinding away, turning the wheel of the Dharma, day after day. Our turning the wheel of the Dharma is we show up, we do a practice period, we sit down, we do zazen, we get up early in the morning. Maybe we're not so inclined to do so, but we do it anyway. We may trudge maybe through the snow to get over here and sit down and do zazen. Maybe only a couple other people are here or something. I don't exactly know. But that's the way it used to be. And so we're doing something, even though we don't know what we're doing. We're doing something. What are we doing? Well, we can look back later and say we're turning the wheel of the Dharma. But with the time that we're doing it, we're not thinking, I'm turning the wheel of the Dharma. I'm turning the wheel of the Dharma. We're just sort of sitting there not knowing really what we're doing. And the same as we keep going deeper into our activity, like even just doing a period of zazen. What are we doing when we do that period of zazen? What is it we're doing? Are we just continually doing what we ordinarily do? That's called our operating system. Are we just normally engaging in our operating system, or are we going to do something different? That means we're turning the wheel of the Dharma. We're doing, making our best effort to do what we think we should be doing, although we don't know what it is. But people say, just breathe in, breathe out. And when you see yourself thinking about something, let go of that thought. If you see yourself feeling something, just experience what that feeling is and say, okay. Okay, I'll do that. But really, when it comes down to it, we don't know what we're doing. So anyway, we do that for a while, or maybe a long time, this turning the wheel of the Dharma, not knowing what we're doing. But all of a sudden, out of no place, it seems, something happens from doing this practice and from decisions we've made. Something happens. And we don't know where it came from. Now, it might be that it could be a wonderful thing that will happen. On the other hand, it may not be a wonderful thing. It might be a very sad thing or a horrifying thing, a terrible thing. But depending on the practice we do, we will receive that in a different... It depends how we receive that. If we open ourselves up to this thing that has drastically changed our lives, or if we reject it. It depends on how we have been turning the Dharma. So the first line of his saying, poem, goes, I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I'll read the whole stanza. I feel my fate and what I cannot fear. I learn by going where I have to go. So, for one thing, he says here, first line, I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. So really, he's turning the whole operating system upside down. Because usually we think the way we normally think is, I go to sleep so I can wake up in the morning and start doing my activities. Right? That's why I go to sleep, and then so I can wake up. But he says, I wake to sleep. I wake to sleep. So he's seeing some relationship between waking and sleeping that's out of the ordinary. Dogen, again, in designing a routine for us to practice, says the day begins when we go to sleep. That's the beginning of the day. That's a little different from our normal operating. But it's important to reflect upon. Now, why would he say that? Why does he say the time that our day begins is when we go to sleep? Because normally we don't think that. So he's trying to show us to look at our lives different from the way we think it is. I have a practice where about 30 or 40 times a day I ask myself, am I awake? Am I awake? And I do it, who knows when, just at some moment of time. And I take it serious. It's a serious question, like I could ask myself right now, am I awake? And, you know, of course, you might think I would think, oh, of course you're awake. There's no doubt about it. But is it? But is it the truth? So I have to do a check. So I look at my digital clock, and I see if I can read the numbers. And I can, because it says 10:25. So I know I'm awake. Because when I'm dreaming, if I ask myself, am I awake or am I dreaming? I look at my digital clock and I can't read the numbers. Because the part of your mind that's dreaming can't process numbers. So then I know I'm dreaming. I'm not awake. I'm in a dream state. So then, I used to do a whole bunch of stuff when I knew I was dreaming, kind of fun stuff. Now, what I do when I know I'm dreaming is I sit zazen. And I have to be careful when I talk about this because it changes. Every time I talk about it, the next time something changes in public. Because I used to say, one wonderful thing about doing zazen when you know you're dreaming is that you can sit in full lotus without any delay. I could just look at my legs and go, I want that one there, and then I want this one up there. And they would go there, and no pain whatsoever. Just sit there, and I could be in full lotus. And I told that once to under these similar circumstances, you know. And then the next time that I was dreaming and knew I was dreaming, he says, okay, I'm going to sit full lotus. I reached down, and they didn't go there, you know. And I said, okay, let's see. Okay. And I pulled on it, and I went, oh, God. And I couldn't get my legs into full lotus in this dream because of all the pain I felt. So that's why I have to be a little careful about what I say. That's what I think I do. But the point I'm trying to make is that when we're dreaming and we're sitting zazen, also the thing that happens repeatedly is we think we woke up. We think we're awake. And sometimes this can happen like 20, 30 times in a row. Like we wake and we're sure we're awake, but then something says, wait a minute, I don't think I woke up. I think I'm still asleep, dreaming. So we check again. Yep, we're dreaming. Go back and do zazen. And the thing is, if you were truly in your dream doing zazen, for doing Zazen, we would know when we thought that moment when we think we're becoming awake. Because we're just there at that moment. So we would see that moment come in when we think we're waking up, but we're not. So the point is the same with the Zazen we do with our waking mind. When's the moment when we fall asleep? Meaning, when's the moment when we're not here? When we're not alert right in this moment, awake here in this moment. So it's that practice we do over and over again. Just waking up to this moment. Not going off to some world. I feel my fate in what I cannot fear. Means, basically, it means my destiny, if we want to use that word, is exactly where I fear to go. He's saying, I feel my fate in what I cannot fear, but what that means is my fear is exactly where, and my fate is exactly where I'm afraid to go. Even though we know that's where we're going to be going, even though we have some anxiety about going there. We think by feeling, this is a quite Buddhist, we think by feeling, what is there to know? Because Buddha basically said, we're navigating through this world based on our feeling. And in Buddhism, there's basically three feelings, either pleasant, unpleasant, or neither one, kind of neutral. But as we go through the world, basically, it's just like, don't like, moment after moment, pleasant, unpleasant. And we're completely trying to move toward that which is pleasant and move away from what's unpleasant. That's our kind of operating system. Moving that way. And then all of the thinking comes from there. From just that pleasant, unpleasant place. So we see something. Does this have a pleasant sensation or an unpleasant sensation? Hear something, smell something, taste something. Moving toward or moving away. And from all of that, all of our mental formations and thought processes emerge. In some ways, we as human beings think we are the most sophisticated species alive on this earth. But really, the basic operating system is pretty primitive. Just pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant, unpleasant. I hear my being dance from ear to ear. That means when all there is just hearing, seeing those sensations. Hearing something, smelling something, seeing something. And there's a kind of a complete dance from ear to ear means this complete, that's completely fine. We could say delightful, but that might be a little excessive. It's just happening. Of those so close beside me, which are you? also means here that there's a certain kind of loneliness sometimes we feel when we do this practice. Because the practice of Zazen is a practice that we do by ourselves. We can't share it exactly, not directly, with anyone else. One Zen master said, and it's a little kind of a nasty thing to say, especially in a public lecture, but he said, you cannot even exchange a fart with anybody else. That's what he means in a certain kind of way. That we are basically, there's a kind of way in which we're here completely alone. But it really doesn't, we don't have to get too worried about it or concerned about it. Because really the only ones who we can really communicate with in a certain kind of way, deeply, are people who we have a very deeply close, intimate relationship with, are the people who do this practice. Who do that same practice of cultivating aloneness. Then we can really feel close to somebody. But if somebody has the practice of just constantly trying to fill in their life with activity and constant, say, like things like parties and this and that, constantly trying to fill in all the aloneness with activity, it's hard to feel close, deeply close. And so the next line is, God bless the ground, I shall walk softly there. Which, he's capital ground. Means, all we can do is just walk on this ground. This ground is kind of sacred. The ground, it's very simple. We just take one step and then the next step. That's the same as breathing in, breathing out. It's the only security we have. Just right in this moment. How do we settle ourselves completely and totally right into this moment? And that's blessing the ground that we walk on, step by step. Breathing in, breathing out. Meeting this situation as it arises, completely, totally. And then meeting the next. And so I shall walk softly there means if you do retreats, you'll be told to walk softly. That will be one of the admonishments of walking in this building. If you do a retreat, they'll say, oh, walk softly, don't go. So that's connected to this and how we handle, say, our bowls when we're eating, is we handle them softly and gently. When we handle those things softly and gently, we also do the same thing in our human relationships. We handle, when we encounter someone, we meet them gently, softly, listening, attentively. Light takes the tree, but who can tell us how? This is related to I wake to sleep. Usually we think the tree takes light and go by a process of photosynthesis can gather in this light in a completely, totally astounding and remarkable way through these biochemical processes and store it and carbon energy. You know, absolutely astounding. Which makes it possible for us to live. If they couldn't, plants couldn't do that, we couldn't be here. We totally rely on that process for our life. Because we can't do it. We can't. They can just be there and live on light, water, you know, and air. We can't just stand here. And live on the light, water, and air. We die. We have to eat them. But But anyway, that's our normal way of understanding how the world works. But in this case, the poet sees something different. Light takes the tree. So there's a... that's because he wants us, to look at that process by which we think we understand the world. Because there's always the other side. It's like the Zen story where a monk comes in to his teacher who's dying and says, teacher, you're ill. Is there anyone who isn't ill? And the teacher says, yes, there is. And the monk says, does that person taking care of you? And the teacher said, I have the opportunity to take care of him. And then the monk says, how is it when you take care of him? And the teacher said, then there is no illness. You see, we are constantly evaluating, are we ill or are we not ill? Am I healthy or am I ill? Thinking we're one or the other. Because we're also thinking, kind of subliminally, or deep down in there, about life and about death. There's sort of this certain thing in our minds that has some concern about dying, about this particular set of skandhas not being in their form forever. And so when we have experienced illness, all of the challenges of our entire life emerge right there. Everything we have ever ignored in our entire life arises under the stress of illness. So that's why this story is very moving. Because this person, this teacher, has been practicing this his whole life. So that when under the stress of illness, nothing changes. Or facing the moment of his death, there's no difference. Means he's not looking. He's not seeing himself as ill or well. Because that's our normal operating system. In other words, what is it? Well, there's only just breathing in and breathing out. That's all there is. And that's where we find our peace and freedom. Not from thinking, I'm sick or not sick. So great nature has another thing to do to you and me. This is capital great nature. Great capital nature. What does it have to do? I think you know. It has another thing to do to you and me. It means that the thing it has to do is it will remove, it will take from us, it will receive from us all of our individuality and all of our personal world. We might think of it, sometimes we think it will be taken away. Everything that's individual and everything that's personal about me is taken away by great nature. But we can maybe think of another way around. Let's just say it's a gift we can give to great nature. We'll give that to great nature. All of my individuality and all of my personal world. Because it's going to happen anyway. It's inevitable. So, he says, take the lively air. What does that mean? Well, it's our practice. We take the air that's lively and alive, and we breathe it in. So we take the lively air, and lovely, learn by going where to go. So So it's nothing to be so depressed or melancholy about. It's not pessimistic. This shaking keeps me steady. I should know. But falls away as always and is near. So again, it's what's falling away, what's happening, is that which we think is always. If we think there's something that's always here, or always going to be there, this is what's falling away. What falls away is always. And that's not far away. It's near. That's what walking on the ground is. It's near to us. It's what Buddhism we call impermanence. Nothing's here forever. And that's not far away. The end of our lives, and maybe I can say this with great joy, instead of, pessimistic. The end of our lives is very near. It's not far away. It's probably a lot closer than we think. And I think that there's a wonderful thing we can say about that. There's not too many wonderful things we can say about that, but I think there is one thing. And that would be, even though the end of our lives is very close, very near, and our time is very short, the wonderful thing we can say about that is that to worry about it or to become anxious about it or in any way upset about that is a complete total waste of time, of that precious little time we have left. So we can always say that right up until the last breath that we breathe in or breathe out. To have any kind of anxiety or tension about the end of our lives coming is a waste of time. He says, this shaking keeps me steady, I should know, means the quieter we become, the more shaking we see. We see it vibrating kind of at a very deep level in our life. It's kind of a shakiness, even though we might appear to be very steady. But that's the vibrancy of our life. So, I don't say this to too many people, but it appears like I'm going to say it to quite a few today. Sometimes when I sit by myself, I shake. But only by myself. I don't do it. It's like sometimes it just feels okay to shake when I'm alone. Under certain conditions. It's not frequently, but kind of infrequently, but, from time to time. When I was 19, I went to a meditation group for the first one I went to. And I sat in the back of the room. I was kind of shy. And sat down. And everybody in the room shook. They were shaking all over the place. Some were yelling and screaming. And I was sitting there. I said, I didn't, but I looked around. There was about six people there. And I had the feeling that the one who shook the most was the one who was like the leader. So then I guess there was tea afterwards or something. I kind of said, there's a lot of shaking going on. And somebody said, oh yeah, we're getting our energy realigned, something like that. So I didn't go back. So I prefer where we just sit still, quietly and still. see if I have anything else. Nope. I think we have a few minutes. We're supposed to end around 11. Is that correct? Or okay. Well, does anyone have any comments, questions, criticism, rebuttal? Yes.
Your talk, I like your talk. It brought to mind a line from a couple of modern wise seers, Laurel and Hardy.
Oh, uh-huh.
A line from one of your films. They're in an old haunted house, and they're sleeping in the bed together. It's at night, of course. And in the middle of the night, Laurel gets up with a start, and Hardy wakes up and says, "What happened?" So Laurel says, "I dreamt I was awake, woke up and found myself asleep."
That's it. I mean, after a while, who knows? We talk about things like unconscious mind, conscious mind, waking mind, dreaming mind, subliminal mind, all kind of enlightened mind, samsaric mind. It's all just one mind going on, I think. But it's manifesting itself continuously in all different ways. Sleeping, waking, zazen, study, meeting someone, saying hello, mind. You know, it's all just one thing happening. Yes? Differentiation?
Yeah, you know, I mean, somebody might not have an experience of real, you can't just make yourself have a real deep spiritual experience.
No, that's...
Through waking states.
Right, well, I'll speak to that. We can't make ourselves have a deep spiritual experience. In other words, really, we don't have a whole lot of control. All we have is what... all that we can do is just experience what this moment is. Because what's arising right now, right here, is just the result of everything from our past conditions. Not only our own individual lives, but the lives of our parents and all human beings and everything that's arising right here. Someone told me recently... And I'm not so knowledgeable of this. I'm sure many of you know more than me about this. But they said there's some kind of element or trace element in the human body that, you know, can only be found or whatever, you know, back around, you know, after a billion years after the universe was formed or something. Something like that. So that means we're coming from the universe. So basically all we can do is just how aware can we be of what this moment is that's arising. And whatever it is that is arising needs to arise. Because as Dogen also says, he says, what's happening right now is a manifestation of the Buddha Dharma, whether you understand it or not. Constantly trying to control things because some things don't feel good. So we're trying to manipulate the situation into something that feels good. But basically, say one of the most unpleasant feelings we can experience as human beings is anger. It's just extremely unpleasant to feel. But if we feel it, we need to feel it. And the best place to feel it is doing zazen. It's not actually going out and hitting a punching bag. We might think so, but that's kind of dispersing the anger. But if we sit in zazen, and you can just feel the depth of the anger when you're angry. It's just, you know. And the only purpose of that anger is just to experience it, just to feel it. When you've felt it, it changes. But if you don't ever allow yourself to feel it, then it's still inside of you. So all we can do is just experience our life. We can't actually say, okay, I'm going to go over here and get to enlightenment now. I'm ready. I'm ready. Anytime. But I have to admit, when I'm dreaming and sitting zazen, I feel like maybe this is it. It's a little different. It's a little different kind of zazen. Because things are happening that don't normally happen, at least in my normal zazen. My waking zazen. So I think, maybe some like profound enlightenment experience is going to happen when I wake up. Or now. Even when I'm dreaming, I don't know. But I also say, oh, look what you're thinking. You're thinking about enlightenment. Be careful. Why don't you just experience what's happening? Instead of, because what's that about? That's about something that's not satisfied about this present state of mind. So we imagine that there's an enlightened state of mind. And that will be very satisfying to us when we experience it. But imagining that sort of thing doesn't really help us. But the only thing that helps us is how do we just experience this moment, whatever it is. So, we can talk about differentiation. Sometimes it's necessary. For instance, we don't want to mix up ant killer and Pam. It can happen from time to time. The cook has to be aware of those things. Even though the can might look the same. So really, there's seven factors of enlightenment, and one is investigating phenomena. So the more actually we see under the oneness of the entire universe, the more we can see it's differentiated. There's a story about one Zen teacher who wanted to have a Dharma discussion with another teacher, was hidden up in the mountains. And he was walking along and he saw a leaf floating down the stream that looked like a vegetable leaf, not an ordinary leaf that should be there. That's being able to differentiate, to pick out one leaf from another leaf. And because he could do that, he had a Dharma discussion with another teacher that changed his life completely around. And not only that, the story that happened between them 1,200 years ago exists. So that picking out differentiation is very important. It's important for having healthy food, too. That we don't pick out the wrong leaves to eat. Or the wrong cans of spray. Yeah, there's no criticism to it. Yeah?
I was trying to come up with my own metaphor for some of the stuff you're talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of seems like when you're talking about practicing zazen, maybe I'm departing, just let me know how my aim is on this. Might be departing from your usual expectations or thought processes.
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, and
oh, well. That's departure. It'll come back.
Actually, are you familiar with health realization?
It's health?
Health realization. They call it HR. It's like a new psychiatric thing from the 70s.
No, not specific.
Okay. They talk about mind, consciousness, and like thoughts or whatever. I'm seeing it as like I went to a drug treatment program,
mm-hmm.
and they do it there
mm-hmm.
instead of 12-step.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it a lot more effective, but I also realize it's essentially a lot of the same teachings.
I think so.
Years, but I think some psychiatrist is dying to discover something.
Well, there's many different ways that we can explain.
Okay,
I've got to be it doesn't seem like so much of a tangent to me, but anyway, there's many different ways we can explain because there's just kind of basically one universal thing going on.
Yeah,
saying it in ways and forms that different people can access things in different ways, using different language and different forms. Mm-hmm. Time for one more, I believe.
Can you maybe relate some of the things you were talking about today to sort of a lifestyle of I'm trying to change or manipulate the way the world is, or sort of, I guess, the lifestyle of activism, or
people
are very invested in justice and equity, but like, because I go back and forth, I'm trying to learn how to remain present and accept how the world is right now, but also make it maybe better in the next moment for everybody.
Sure. Well, yes. The way we change things for kind of the larger picture than just, you know, looking at myself, is starting with myself. And so we can choose, you know, how we feel, you know, our life energy can work for the world. But still, it comes back to what we're doing right now. Not so much the idea of it. Because we'll get frustrated if we're living in an idea, the idea. But we can still, gather together with other people who have a like-minded vision to do something. But still, when we're talking to other people who don't have that same vision, we have to be calm, respectful, quiet. You know, if we're agitated and we want too much our way, they won't listen. So it comes back to doing this process that's actually just walking on the ground softly, but we're actually moving there. And we can choose many activities. We're not limited in ways to help, many different ways to help people who are suffering and ourselves too. But it takes perseverance and sometimes some re-nurturing for ourselves because it's very challenging. Well, I think we're out of our time.